Welcome back to our 108th episode of the Launcher Farm Show. I interview Brad McDaniel, who's the founder and CEO of Likely.ai. In this episode, Brad and I talk about why agents need to leverage artificial intelligence in their business if they want to stay relevant and competitive in the future. And Brad shares how to leverage AI in your marketing, even if it's offline and old school. And we talk about what agents need to understand about artificial intelligence technologies like ChatGPT and other companies that are shaking up how this business will be run in the future. We also share a super easy way to implement AI to increase the quality of your contact information and build a solid database with up-to-date content. And we talk about how you can use artificial intelligence to predict who is likely to make a move in your farm and how you can stay in contact with them. Plus, we talk about a ton of other ideas that you can use to grow your geographic farm. So be sure to check out this episode, like and subscribe, and enjoy the episode with Brad. Welcome back to another episode of the Launcher Farm Show. I'm your host, Ryan Smith, and today we've got a great guest. It's Brad McDaniel. He's the CEO and founder of Likely.ai. So Brad, take a second, tell us a bit about yourself and why you're here.
Hey, well, thank you very much for having me. I love solving problems for people. The real estate industry seemed to always have problems with technology, kind of a laggard within the industry. And so, right out of high school and then college, and my dad said is, "Hey, go get your license." And I was like, "Why?" He's like, "Cause it's always good to have." I said, "Okay." While doing that, I started doing some lending, and it really was. I saw how backwards the marketing side, and I came out of college with a marketing degree, so. I'm like, whoa, okay, whole world of opportunities to solve problems and help people. And that led me down the path to founding Likely and where we are today.
Awesome. So yeah, so just for a kind of backstory, obviously you mentioned your dad telling you to get into real estate. I know the backstory, but you have a family of real estate agents. So kind of tell us how that kind of evolved and getting your license the first few years.
Absolutely. I'm almost going to take one step backwards to go forward here.
Sure.
I have very vivid memories of growing up, and I have an older brother and a younger sister, older brother Greg, younger sister Kelly. And we used to have Friday nights, and it was called a blockbuster movie night, but that meant that we would get to pick out a blockbuster VHS tape. I know now I'm old, right? And we'd also get a Domino's pizza, and then we'd do trifold and stuff of those like bins of letters from my dad, and probably like bins and bins of letters. And he was doing farming. I mean, he was literally blanket bombing an entire area called Alamo, California. And it's a way that generated great business for him, but it took a lot of effort.
Yeah.
And, I clearly remember how much effort it took. And so now, fast forward to, 2005 and founded my first company out of college and the whole marketing side of it. And I was like, wow, like there is so much waste that happens. Mm. There's got to be a way that when there is this much benefit from talking to people, can we get in touch with them at the right time, right? To say the right thing. Another thing that we had to do was door knock, right? And then leave the flyers and all that. And my brother did a bunch, but I did some of it, but he definitely took it to the next level. And it was the same thing where you're doing farming to, one degree of it. Yeah. It's not postcards, but it was using the same approach. And he would be like, man, I go down, he'd take one side of the street. I take the other side of the street. We just knock the doors, leave the thing, say the pitch. And people didn't duck and cover, right? I mean, like now someone needs the doorbell. Everyone looks like, did you invite someone? No. And everyone hits the ground. Like, but then it was like, oh, hey, we got company. So I think it was a different world, even though it was only a couple of years ago. And, all those life lessons in working really hard in order to kind of establish a name within a geographic area, I think, per your audience, like that's really what farming is, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways you can do that, which you're an expert in.
Yep.
And that was just my experience in starting it.
Yeah. So I think it's important to understand your background, to understand where you are now and where you got there, because you are in the real estate space. You are in artificial intelligence for real estate. And I think it's something that is important because there are a lot of people who get into this business who have no experience in the real estate world. They come from some corporate world or some tech space, and they don't understand the workings of it. And it is important to have a strong understanding of the industry because, like you said, you can find the solutions when you have seen it and when you've seen the behind the scenes, which is part of why I started Launch Your Farm, because I saw an opportunity where it's like, hey, there's people aren't doing this well. They're not doing it efficiently. There's better ways to do this. And I think it's important that you do have that background, but also you've built something really cool. So let's talk about, before we dive into getting into AI, kind of a bit about what you guys do at Likely.ai, and then we're going to dive into the conversation about AI, because it's a topic that is obviously right now the hottest topic.
Absolutely.
In almost every industry right now. So from a real estate perspective, let's kind of explain how you got into it and what it is.
Yeah, I mean, kind of part of that backstory was that I tried all the different, you know, things. I did commercial brokerage, I did lending, I did residential, did land acquisition in Texas for D.R. Horton. So I got used to the complexities and also some of the things that are less complex within residential real estate. But it all fit in that same box of how do you get a large asset transaction, basically, right?
Yeah.
From acquiring all the way through closing. And there were so many different things that happened through that pipeline. And at the time, there was a lot of concern around, you know, privacy and PII data and all that, that I chose to try to solve it at the top of the funnel. I saw a lot of CRMs out there. I worked for a market leader in Trulia for half a decade and on the business side. So like on the product business side. And so I also got to see how large enterprises were solving this problem for small businesses, right? Yep. Owners, like individual agents, and where the gaps were. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, the more money I see poured into CRMs and systems like this, they'll all become the all-in-one. I've got everything here. They're going to reach feature parity. What happens when they reach feature parity is they're going to try to go upstream.
Yeah.
And try to say, okay, now that I have this optimized funnel, how do I get more good things into this funnel? And that's what led me to Likely. And I did the first version of this back in 07, which is probably the worst time in the world to start a prop tech company. But it did teach me a lot of things about what it meant to be on the bleeding edge and not the cutting edge of technology.
Yeah.
And just for everyone that's listening, the difference between those two, it's a nuance, but it's big nuance, is the bleeding edge is when you have a really cool thing or an idea for something, but the industry isn't ready for it.
Yeah.
So the adoption curve, you just get killed when you try to take it to market, thus the bleeding.
Yeah.
And now fast forward, you know, until I call it 5 years ago. And I was, I joke about this a little bit, but I was, went to an Inman conference in New York. You always go to all of those things and talk to everybody. And it was the first time that I had seen a lot of people talking about AI and big data. But it was like high schoolers talking about sex, real excited, but they didn't know what they were talking about. I'm like, perfect. The final domino has fallen where they want it. And the current solutions in the market were really more marketing automation platforms than true artificial intelligence companies. And at that time, I already had a patent for predicting future events in real estate. And I'd kind of sat on it. And that was from my first business because I didn't think the industry was ready yet. And so at this point, I said, okay, it's time now to actually go and do the hard work of building a platform that can satisfy a user base that's usually not extremely tech savvy, very hardworking. They're all independent contractors. So there's fragmentation within the industry of how things are done. And so it's kind of a hard challenge to solve because you don't really have a clear go-to-market strategy, right? It's a top-down or bottom-up. Like, it's different for each brokerage and each team and each everybody.
Yep.
And I said, is this worth doing? And the more I looked at the market and got frustrated with what I saw, I said, no, someone needs to actually go and do the best you can at building artificial intelligence for real estate, period. Or real estate artificial intelligence, say it the way you want. And because everyone likes to say it a little differently. And, you know, as we got into it, you know, you have 3,142 different data sources from each independent, you know, entity. That's like a county, a borough, you know, a parish, you call it whatever you want. And it was a challenge that became more and more of a challenge as we went through it. Trying to do it the right way, because there's all the data that's coming in that has to be normalized, has to make sure that it's staying current. And the problem that we're trying to solve is a highly unbalanced classification problem with a time series component that's probability, right? And so what does all that mean? I'll unpack it for a second, right? Is highly unbalanced classification. So that means you have one class that's, you know, let's call it 95% of people don't want to sell. 5% of people every year want to sell. And if you break that down to a quarter, now you're talking about a 1%, maybe 1.5%, depending on which quarter it is.
Yeah.
And anything that's more like a gap between the two classes of 5%, I mean, data scientists, it's a really hard challenge. And then throw in the diversity of where the data comes from and how it's all munged, to say another way. And then we have to find the demographic data, and then you layer in. Long story short is it's a very hard problem to solve. And that's why I think a lot of companies would say, hey, yeah, I'm an artificial intelligence company, when really they use, you know, data mining techniques, or they use if-then statements, or they use intent signal from online browsing history, things like that, that aren't really artificial intelligence.
Right.
But it is kind of pulling like a rabbit out of a hat. And unless you really ask the right questions, they're like, all right, well, what type of models do you use? You wouldn't ever know.
It sounds good, but it's not actually what it is.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I'm selling this smart automation. If I slap AI on it, like, it sounds cool. Yeah. It's probably worth another $10 a month or whatever the number is. And so that's what I saw a lot of companies doing. And because of that, I said, all right, we're going to go solve this. So what we offer today is we have built a system that, let me say it this way, what the closest thing we've seen to true, you know, artificial intelligence probability models, like whether it's boosted trees or deep learning, was at a national level, and it was a 12-month lookalike model. So like everyone that sold, they built a lookalike model, and then they forecast it for the next 12 months. And that's like, and they were like, yeah, it's good AI. I'm like, what? So we went and we're gonna build a model for every single county, because real estate's so hyper-local. We have multiple models in every county. We've tried everything from deep learning to gradient boosted trees and a lot of things in between. We found this kind of mosaic now of models that seem to produce a good result. The thing about real estate and AI is, because it's not e-commerce data or healthcare data or something where there's tons of it coming in, it's from one source, you can build models on that a lot faster and easier. When you have it from 3,000 sources and each one is the same thing and the demographics are totally different, and there's laws about what data you can have, it gets really, really complicated.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone, I know that no one will ever have a perfect model for real estate, for especially when it comes to selling or buying or anything, because there's things that just aren't predictable.
And that's the hard part, whereas you're trying to predict something. And in my own experience in real life, is that humans are predictable in that, like, when I do my door knocking, I can predict with almost certainty how many people are going to sign up for my report and how many people are going to be at home.
Really?
You can predict those things. But and then it becomes, how do you pick the right? I don't know which people are going to do that. That's where the AI can take it to the next level and say, okay, how many of these people, like, you know roughly how many people are going to sell it each year. You know roughly the average price points. You can kind of get an idea, but it's how do you find out who that is? And that's where you guys come in. And I want to dive into that a little bit closer to the end and kind of give more fraction, but I want to take it back and scale back, because that's a lot of stuff for people to unpack, because there's a lot with AI that the average agent has no idea. It just went over their head. I think I'm pretty tech savvy, went over my head. So let's go back and talk about AI at its most fundamental core. What is AI? If people are listening to this, don't even know anything about AI. And then let's build off of that.
AI is an umbrella term. Under that umbrella, there's all different types of ways to do something. You know, you can do like regression analysis or something like that, that solves about 80% of business problems. And that's usually where most models kind of live.
Okay.
You can go up to where there's these, think of like a decision tree or a gradient boosted tree, and it's, you know, it's getting much more sophisticated. It requires less amount of data, which is a good thing for certain types of problems you're trying to solve. And then the most, like, kind of the top echelon of that stack would be kind of in the deep learning category. That's driverless cars, things like that. Now, all of them have a big kind of blind spot, which is explainability.
Okay.
You know, why did the car turn left? Why did you predict that property? Why? And so they have made some progress there, but not a ton. And I think that's one of the areas that gets really frustrating for the end business owner who hires someone to come build models for them or something like that.
Yeah.
Because they can't explain why it made the wrong choice or why it made the right choice. Right. Yeah. And what it really is most models, especially like large language models, like ChatGPT, that's kind of all the craze right now.
Yeah.
Our chief scientist, he can speak geek better than me by far. But he spent 5 years working on these 10 years ago, you know, when it wasn't even a cool thing. Mm. For IBM Watson, and it was for the healthcare system. And he took it from a 6% accuracy to a 97% accuracy. And he can tell you exactly, and all the living things it boils down to is, you know, he basically builds a key about like what the lock looks like. How do I get that key and to unlock this next thing that's going to come, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the track and build a model that knows the key structure wins. And what he talks about right now, and what I agree with him on, is that large language models do have, you know, they go off the rails really easily. And so if you're using ChatGPT, which we do, we use a bunch of different other things just internally for marketing, everything.
Yeah.
They're really kind of cool in certain ways once you understand how to talk with them. And there's this whole career now that's like has a term, which is a prompt engineer, yeah. Right? And what we found is that if you're not careful with them, people will start to think that ChatGPT is a person. And then they get frustrated that it's not acting like a person back to them.
Yeah.
When in reality, you know, large language models train on a ton of data, but it's all probability of which word comes next. Right. And so if you start to train on more things, like you've seen some of the things happening with Microsoft after they made that deal, is the models are now threatening to do things or expose things about the, you know, the reporter that's trying to write a story about it or whatever it is. And all it, people go, oh my God, it's going to take over. And what happens when it gets access to the power grid and it's going to turn off the lights. And all that model is doing is probability of what words should come next.
Right.
So it doesn't actually know what it's saying. And that's why when you look at real estate, and if you're using it to write like listing descriptions or things like that, if you type in an address, it'll paint a beautiful picture for you on that property.
Yeah.
Actually, it'll be a load of crap. You know? That's just is what it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the things we've been playing with is like, how do we inject all this big data in order to make a prompt that has still keeps that creative writing ability with, you know, but adding factual components to it. So you kind of put bumpers on a bowling lane, right?
Yep.
A ball. So that means you always get a strike.
So you mentioned ChatGPT, and that is obviously the big thing that people are talking about. There's things like the image one, DALL-E, and these other things.
Yeah.
Agents are, I think there's kind of two camps in my opinion right now. There's agents who are completely jumping in going, this is awesome. This is the future of real estate. And there's people say, kind of putting their head in the sand and hiding things. Where do you see the real estate industry shifting with AI, either using something like your own programs or these other programs in their business? How do you see things adapting or shifting over the next few years?
Yeah, I would say it's very much like a product adoption curve. Where right now you have the early adopters, the tech enthusiasts that are jumping in, the chasm's coming, and you know the early majority, late majority, have not adopted, and I don't think they will until it is. Well, they don't have to learn how to speak to the machine, so you have to basically pull that forward into whatever products people are building, and as we start to see more of that occurring, I think the adoption will occur in a similar way that people adopted. Call it mobile phones and all the tech in a mobile phone, they don't know that they're using or have been using AI for the last 10 years.
Right.
Because it's so easy to use and it's helpful. It makes it easier to do with the tasks they're trying to solve. Like what job am I hiring AI to do?
Yep.
I don't know I'm even hiring AI anymore. It just makes my job, what I do to get paid, easier to do. So what camp would I fall into? I think that the early adopters are going to have a lot of fun. I think it's you know engaging to do. It's pulling the mask off of this thing that was intangible. They couldn't access unless you're a data scientist.
Yeah.
So they're having a lot of fun. I don't think that it'll go much past that until products, and we've done it ourselves. We've seen other people doing it now too. Bring it in a way that makes it extremely easy to use.
100%.
And not saying that the real estate industry is full of a bunch of dummies. It's just the fact that the real estate industry is full of a bunch of people that like to sell homes.
Yeah.
And that's what they know the most. That's what they're good at. They like to be belly to belly with people in the living room. They don't like to be screen to belly with ChatGPT.
Yeah. I get, and I think it's the, like you said, it's the easier it is for them to use, the more we'll use it. And I use Canva as an example. People love Canva. Well, prior to Canva, you could do graphic design like Canva, but it wasn't as easy to use and people wouldn't use it because it took more work, more time, more energy to figure out how to do that. And people are going, I'm not a graphic designer. As soon as they make it easy and people go, oh, I don't have to be a graphic designer. I can literally just drag this. And then it tells me, oh, move it here, move it here. Then people jump on board. And I think the same thing's going to happen with AI, where it's like, you said that you have the early adapters who are messing around with it, making it cool. Then you're going to have companies jumping in going, okay, how do we take that, make it easier for agents? And I think that's where the opportunities will be with agents right now, is learning to use it before those things come in place to position yourself. So when those things do come there, you're like, hey, I've been using this for the last couple of years. I've been doing this. The early adapters will jump on and then it'll be something new. And then it'll be something new that's coming along.
I mean, it's almost like I've lived this learning curve with Likely. Is because when we started, we only focused on the AI side, and not reducing friction from use.
Right.
And so we literally were emailing spreadsheets, you know, Excel CSVs, unsecured in emails to our early clients. And but they knew what to do with it. They took it, they sent it off to the printer, they stuck it in their CRM, like they knew how to utilize it. But that is such a small percentage of the industry. And for us to grow, just like for any AI tool now to grow and thrive within the industry, you know, the amount of friction that was there was massive. And so everything we talk about internally right now is reducing friction from use, right? Making it fun, making it easy, making it understandable, giving that consumer experience that's perfect. Building APIs so it's already embedded in the CRM that you use, which Follow-Up Boss, we're fully embedded with them. Like things like that, so they don't have to change. Like whenever you ask someone to change what they do on a daily basis, ton of friction, right? And so when we ask an agent or a lender or you name it, real estate professional X, to do something different, they have to learn that new thing.
Yeah.
And unless it literally is someone saying, I want to buy today, like, here's my check. Even then we were seeing agents not taking action.
Yeah.
Well, like, guys, like these are literally the Glengarry, like, you know, the old movie, right? You know, closers, right? That whole pitch he does. I'm like, we could write this on a post-it note, and give it to you and say, hey, call Bob Smith. He's ready to sell his $7 million home. And half of the people wouldn't call him.
Yeah.
It blew I mean, like even within the industry for so long, like because it's such a sales kind of led industry, I thought that people would grab that post-it note and call, and we just didn't see the adoption. So that's why I think the same thing with AI, right? Just on a kind of on the large language model side, you've seen the same thing. You have a small group grabbing it, and the vast majority that, you know, the early majority, late majority.
Yep.
They're not there yet.
I think, again, from my own experience and what I've witnessed in this industry, is that I think there is a bit of a grind culture in our industry. And I think there's the people like are obsessed with the grind and like, I made X amount of calls or I did X amount of things. And instead, if you made it easier for them, like it almost takes away the value that they think they bring just by making the calls. And I know from my own experience, like with farming, my idea of a farm is not trying to get my name out there to as many people as possible. My job this is what I teach, is try to get the people who are more likely to move into me, get the people who are more likely to want to work with me into me, so that I can follow up with them and build relationships with them versus trying to just get my name out there. And I think a lot of agents are so focused on getting their name out there to as many people as possible that they miss the opportunities. Like you said, here's the address of this person's probably going to make a move this year. Call that person first. I think my experience is they'd rather call 10 people.
Yeah, that is, you're right on the money. I think that you and I couldn't be more in agreement. I'm not always in agreement with people. So it's awesome that you know this industry so well, because that is taking the value away from what they do, the grind, you said. You know, when there's an industry like this, where there's a lot of money to be made and the barrier to entry is low, you know, having to need that grind to make it past that first year or the seventh year, kind of those like milestones.
Yeah.
You think you're right about that. I mean, I've never heard it said that way, but when you really kind of pull back and think about it, like there is almost that, yeah, anyone can start, no one stays, no one survives unless you do the grind. Right.
Yeah.
And And that's something we look to solve.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think that's where then if you put the same effort of the grind into the more advanced leads, you're going to be that much further ahead. And it's, so I used an example one time with my, in my farm, we did a neighborhood home prices report and we tracked the turnover rate of the farm as a whole. And it was about 5.6%. And then we took the turnover rate of our neighborhood home price report. And it was almost two and a half times of the people who were getting our report. It was almost 2.5 times what the average was, which means the people that were getting our report every 2 months was 2.5 times more likely to make a move than the average person in the neighborhood. So it's like, well, if I'm going to spend my time, would I rather spend it on the 3,000 other homes or the 400 people that are getting my report? That's where I'd rather spend my time. And that's how you get more efficient. That's how you get ahead and not have to spend your resources. But so many people think farming is about just getting my name out there to as many people as possible. If I just tell more people, it's like, no, find the people who are more likely to make a move and put your time there. And that's where something like you guys are speeding up that process at light speed, because you're eliminating most of the grind work and helping agents do that. And that's huge if agents can grasp that and be willing to put the time in to do that.
And I could see how it could be scary in this call, kind of a sit me like just with the grind and, okay, if I don't adopt this, right? I mean, I think that there are a lot of people who are going to go, you know, kind of just go back to whatever else they like to do.
Yep.
Because if they don't want to adopt it, they're scared of it, right? I mean, there's that external existential threat.
Yep.
Of technology is going to make this easier when you have, you know, when you basically have, you know, one agent for every five transactions, like how am I going to grow past this or that? We have 1.6 million agents, 5 million transactions. Like, you know, odds are I get one or two transactions a year unless I do something different.
Yeah.
And really work on it. And the people that have the ability kind of to understand technology, not that you're a programmer, but be able to like, how, where does it fit into the puzzle of my business?
Yeah.
Is what I mean by that. Yep. Are the ones who are going to thrive. And those are the ones we like to work with, because yep. It doesn't matter if you're applying it to door knocking, direct mailing, cold calling, texting, custom audiences on social media, on and on and on, you know, and we've had some really awesome things we've seen people do with our models that we didn't start thinking that they would do it. And that's what I think the real estate industry is it's very innovative. And that it keeps surviving even when there's lawsuits trying to smash portions of it. It's because it's 1.6 million entrepreneurs who chose to be an entrepreneur in selling property.
Yep.
And so they were very creative about how to do stuff. And that's why when you said, hey, this is what I do, I'm like, I would love to be on here and talk with you, because yeah, you are the essence, you know, the people that listen to your show are the essence of how do I get better and more creative about my technique I choose, which is farming.
And I think too, the key comes down to as well is the value you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. And I use social media as an example. If you look at marketers 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the money they had to pay to get a list, just to buy a list of people to market to, or the information that we have now access to, you literally can click on a social media profile and find out their names, their phone numbers, their address, where they went on vacation, when they had a baby. You can use Google analytics to do that. You can literally run an ad on Google or Facebook ads and say, show me the people who are this age. And the more people adopt it, the less value they see in it. And it's those early adopters. If you would have shown that same thing to a good marketer 10 years ago or 20 years ago, they would have been giving up their firstborn child to get that. And so as more people adopt it, and I think the same thing's going to happen with AI, is like if you can adopt it correctly, implement into your business and really grasp what it can do to your business, you will succeed. There's going to be people that are going to try to adopt it, but won't value it and will either ignore it or add it in mediocrely and just not take it seriously. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity for agents if they're committed to really putting that into their business and making it a backbone of their business.
I think the agents that don't, I think the market will sort that out, if you know yes. what I mean. And yeah. and it's not only the application that we built. Like one of the things I really enjoyed starting to do is we do our thing with our private Facebook group where we just talk about AI. Like different implementations of things that can help.
Yep.
Like I'm dyslexic, I'm open with it, right? I've been using, you know, different forms of AI to offset that one kind of weakness that I have in my, that chink in my armor, to allow me to utilize the strengths I have.
Yep.
And if an agent looks at their business in the same way and says, maybe, hey, I've got a great referral system, but man, I'm just not great at writing emails that are perfect at scale. Or, you know, I can write emails and a great referral system, but I'm not creative enough to come up with images. Or I hate my voice. I'm great at everything else. If I could just have that. Yep. Or I'm good at everything, but I suck at video editing. Is there a faster way I can do that? You know, there's, you know, awesome solutions that are kind of going to each one of those types of categories. So I would say that find where you feel you're the weakest and then pick a solution. I would lean towards artificial intelligence, maybe because I'm kind of an advocate for it. And I see the potential for it, but I can promise you one thing. If you adopt it today, in a year from now, and you can hold me accountable to this, Ryan,
mark the date.
Anyone who adopts it today will be not just surviving in a year from now, but they will thrive. Anyone that does not, I think that your days in most industries, especially if it's a sales, you know, what have you done for me lately type of industry.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think you said it very well in that it's find those weaknesses and fill the gap there. A lot of people are thinking that it's going to replace me at what I'm good at. And it's won't replace the things that you're not good at so that you can do more of what you are good at. And I think you also said, which I think is a great way, is that I don't, in my beliefs, I'm sure you agree, is that AI, there's not like one source of AI that's just going to come in and wipe out everything. It's going to be sub things. There's going to be different businesses, different products and different services that will help fill the gaps within all those things. So if you suck at, like you said, video editing, find some video editing AI software that will help you. If you aren't good at those things, you can fill the gaps in and plug the holes in your ship using AI so that you can do what you do best. And at the end of the day, anyone who watched the show or has been following me knows that the core of farming is the relationships. If your sole value in farming is sending out postcards or beating your own chest or talking about how great you are, you won't, even if you don't use AI, you're gonna flounder. Your ultimate goal is to build relationships. Mm-hmm. When you put the tools in place to help you build more relationships or better relationships, that's when you're going to thrive. And using AI will get you to the relationship faster, will help you stay in communication faster, better, and help you strengthen relationships if you're willing to utilize it.
Absolutely, it will. And that's something that AI, I don't think, will ever be able to solve. You know, people talk about, will there ever be a true AI and a bunch of different terms they've used to call it that. I think we're getting closer to it, but I would say the stage we're at right now and probably for the next several years is where the junior copywriting job, you no longer have to do that job. If you start using AI, you promote yourself to an editor.
Yep.
That way. Yep. Where you just don't send it out until you review it, tweak it, like the listing description. If you just type in an address, you're going to get a beautiful listing, but probably won't be the right about the bedrooms or bathrooms or something about it won't be accurate. So, you know, just think of AI as a force multiplier. You know, I like to use military terms because I went to military school and this and that. And, you know, force multipliers is like if you have a bow and arrow, whole lot better than a rock. If you have an M16, whole lot better than a bow and arrow, because now I'm like 50 people with bows and arrows. If I've got an F16 or if I go to an atom bomb, like it basically requires less of you to get more of the results.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what AI can do.
So I want to dive in then to your product specifically, because I think it's really cool what you guys are doing. And I think can be a force multiplier if people are willing to do that. And I think if agents understand what it is, it might help them figure out how they can use it. So you guys, give me the grade 4 level, what likely.ai does and how that can actually help agents grow their business.
So we've built a kind of our core intellectual property is tons of models that predict who's most likely to be selling in the next 90 to 180 days. We found signal that brings in a little bit, but every market's a little different.
Yep.
And so that took 3 years, almost 4 years, to get something that was, I think, sellable, right? And we had a big, after about a year and a half, it blew up, and then we had to rebuild it, and then we worked with like 30 data scientists. I mean, like, we've really tried so many different things. So in a nutshell, that's kind of the essence. And then from that, it's how do we deliver that and make it accessible to the industry? And we kind of have two ways that we allow, that we sell it, I guess. And one would be what we call a likely seller county license, where you can get all of the likely seller predictions within a county updated each month, so you can dominate a market, right? So you can farm like no one's business, take unknowns and turn them into knowns, right? Or METs, or however you like to call it.
Yep.
Other option is, well, you give us a set of addresses or people or contacts that you care about. And that's what we call a refresh engine. And this is, I think, also plays into farming quite nicely, because we have a lot of people that come in and get their file from their title rep or whoever it is. And here's my seven neighborhoods.
Yep.
They drop it in. And what we do in the refresh engine is kind of three things, a ton more, but try to simplify here, like you said, is we enrich the contacts. So add addresses, phone numbers, emails, histories, all that great jazz. So you have a complete understanding of who they are. Then we apply our modeling to predict sellers, distress sellers, whatnot, score them. And then we monitor them 24/7 for any change in any of this data that give you all the other reasons why to make that call. So likely sellers are really valuable, but building a relationship because these other things are shifting around allows you to have a much more impactful conversation when they are a likely seller.
Yeah. Yeah.
To your point about building a relationship.
Yeah. And I think this is where as well, when you do farming with AI, if you're building the relationships underneath, by the time they're ready to move, you hopefully have built a relationship with them so that you are the person they choose. You can know and be speed up the process. So you know who's more likely to move. But if you haven't built a relationship with them, it doesn't matter if you know they're going to move. Someone who's built a relationship will probably be more likely to do that. So how do you take that information? How have your agents been taking that information and connecting with them and creating value and create those relationships? Because it's one thing to say, here, this guy's probably going to make a move. How does an agent go, all right, now that I know that, what do I do next with it?
Yeah, that is it. How do you kind of complete the loop, right?
Yeah.
So we've seen all of these, direct mail or handwritten postcards. If you do a handwritten address to these, your response rate is massive, especially if it's on an invitation size card, pink or blue, for some reason. then we have custom audiences. So Facebook used to let you do this. It's kind of pulling back a little bit, not as much. So then we started people doing geo-addressable ad targeting. So that's where there's a digital plot boundary line that goes up to infinity. And when anyone walks into the little boundary of 101 Main Street, you can target any of their connected devices. So phones, tablets, whatever, with display banner ads and video ads. We've seen a bunch of people do that. I think that's great for branding, but not really as a good acquisition channel.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
We've seen people do, and one of our clients, they have hundreds of clients that they have hundreds of ISAs that they started buying a ton of our data for. And they do either texting or cold calling or emailing. And we've seen success, I think, with the compliance continues to evolve around on the do not call. What are the state requirements? Should you do this? Should you do that? Do you want to get it fine? So I think that's a kind of part of the industry that's having some squishiness. It's kind of moving around.
Yep.
And then, but emailing, you can always email, right? And people won't beat you up on emailing as much anymore. So those are several of the ways, but it does usually take some type of system, however you like to do your marketing. And this is what I tell when clients come on, is whatever your brand is, if your brand is direct mail, if your brand is digital, if your brand is events, whatever it is, apply your brand to this.
Yeah.
Right. Take this and bring those people into your brand, and the ones that connect with you, you win.
Yeah. And I think that's where understanding those, what I call strategy stacking, when you learn to layer the strategies you have together to overlap it, you'll get more out of it. And this would be another layer to that. And I think, again, my experience is that the days of singular strategies in farming are gone. When people used to, okay, I was a cold caller, I was a door knocker, I was a, I just sent out postcards. That is not enough anymore with so many more strategies out there, with so many things competing for our attention and our time and our energy and resources. We have to make sure that we're hitting people in different ways, using AI to enhance the other things you're doing is going to make it that much better, but you have to have more than one prong, because otherwise you'll miss out. And I would say one person may respond to a cold call, but what if you called the other partner that's living there, or someone may take your postcard and throw it in the garbage, or someone may see you at a community event and go, I don't care. Or someone may see you at a community event and go, oh my gosh, I love that person. So you have to make sure that you're reaching, if this is, and I say the caveat is, this is only if you want to have real true market dominance. If you're happy with getting a few deals a year, do your one or two strategies, whatever. But if you really want to have market share in your farm, you're going to have to layer it into multiple approaches. That's where you're going to get real true market domination.
I agree completely. I usually recommend at least one branding channel and then one acquisition channel.
Yep.
So the branding channel should be cheaper, should be more broad-based to kind of get your name, face, team name, whatever it is that kind of your brand is. And then a follow-up, which is an acquisition. That's usually more personal, time-intensive, ISA-driven, whatnot. And we've got a great cheat sheet on this we call frequency by frequency. So what channel frequency are you going to talk on? And then how frequently are you going to hit them on that channel? In order to have a winning strategy.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. So I want to ask you then one last question before we wrap up is, I know that for a lot of agents, when they think about AI and they think about lead generation, most people think about generating the point up to generating the lead. And Dean Jackson's a guy I love and follow. And he talks about our business is really three distinct businesses. He said, there's the before unit, which is everything we do to get a client into the door to sign the paperwork. And then there's the during unit, which is from the signed paperwork to closing on that house. So that's everything we're doing, the closings, the showings, the home inspections, all of the stuff, the customer service part of it. And then there's the after unit, which is they're now no longer a client legally and they're in your database. I find that a lot of agents are good at one of those and they're usually not good at the others. Where I see an opportunity for agents is to use AI in that during unit. And a lot of people are thinking about using AI in that before unit of how do I get a lead? How do I find that lead? And then they drop the ball on it. Where do you see opportunities for agents to use AI in that? I'm working with a client, I've got them, I'm taking them out, they're active. How can agents get better with AI in that phase, would you say?
I think that there's probably at least two ways. So there's been a lot of advancements in like computer vision. And so the first would be making sure that there's not errors or omissions or anything that could cause risk to the transaction closing in the title side. And I really don't know why there's not more money being invested there, because I think there's an opportunity there, plus blockchain, plus.
Yeah.
As well as repeatability. Yeah, I think that's the other piece of that middle unit that you called, where right now, CRMs and market automation platforms, you set basically one pattern and say, okay, repeat that to everybody as if they're all Jane Doe or Susie Smith or whatever. And I think the repeatability component here has, as weird as it's going to sound, variability in the repeatability, right? And so basically the model would pick several personas that all have successful outcomes. But then you funnel people into these different personas and have the experience that you have with them vary based upon that, all with that same happy transaction. Because maybe you got the type A guy who wants, you know, texts every other day about what's going on in the house. I'm on this. The other person on the far other side is like, dude, I don't want to know anything about how you make my sausage. Just tell me that the price is right and that it closes on this date.
Yep.
And if you treat those two the same way, then now unit's going to be unsuccessful for both.
Yeah. I think that's where I was kind of going with that, because I think that there's opportunities for us to create systematized plans, but customized to each person using AI. And a lot of people have a simple system they follow, and that's great. But there are opportunities, I think, for agents to create an experience for them, not just the showing the house, not just unlocking the door, not just writing the offer. It's through the follow-up, through the experience they get, through the referrals they get. And if you look at reviews, they say that the point of the people that are the happiest and the most happy with you is when the transaction is written, not when it's closed. That I've got an offer, I got it accepted, that's like the peak. So, and I find there's a lot of opportunities for us to get better in that transaction, in that period. And I think there are opportunities for AI. I don't know where that, I'm not an AI guy, but I think there's definitely some opportunities for agents to use AI to increase that.
And I mean, I think that without going too crazy right now, I mean, using a large language model like a ChatGPT in place of an if-then type of, you know, chatbot, it can be good, but it carries some risk with it. As just as far as, like, is it really going to speak correctly? Because it's trained generically, it'll speak great. You won't be able to tell it's not a human. It will say what you would say for your brand. I think that's where there's some risk. You just have to kind of keep a human in the loop. And we've talked about whether or not we'd want to do this. I mean, because we've got a chief scientist that large language models are like, that's his jam. Like, do we go about and build a real estate trained large language model? What would the use cases be? And, you know, we've talked through it ad nauseum. And honestly, I don't know if there's a valid use case to do it. And that, and if there is one, then there's always that counterpoint of, well, why doesn't, you know, category king XYZ just also do that? And then you're out of business. So you have a kind of single point of failure if they already have adoption within the industry. And so, like, for those reasons, it's unsure to me as far as for how much creativity there'll be specifically within the residential real estate space. Because of that.
So I'll ask one last question before we wrap up then. This is half serious, half joking. Is there a way to find out who's most likely to be an asshole client or an idiot client? Because we always get them once in a while, and it's like, I wish there were some flags that would come up and be like, all right, this guy is going to be a treat to deal with. I'm half joking, but that'd be nice if there was a warning flag model.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so what it comes down to, when you train a model, you're going to want about 10,000 data points, like 10,000 people or things that go through. And then you're going to want to, if you're doing a classification model, in this case, asshole, not asshole, right? Is that you want to have whatever data points you have on all of them being consistent. And then you train a model on, you know, these are the positives, these are the negatives, and watch how it works. And then if you can feed that into it, you know, as they come to you, then that would be a, you know, a classic classification model problem to solve.
I think that's a business I'll start. Just also the asshole monitor.
Lip tester.
Exactly. All right. So we always wrap up with a last piece of advice. So if agents are looking to start using AI in their business, they want to take it seriously, maybe don't know where to start with it, what advice would you give on them trying to start adapting to the business because they see that there's value in it?
I would advise that they should always ask a question around, what types of models are you using? And ask that sincerely, not like trying to trip up a salesperson or anything. And if the salesperson doesn't know, they probably won't. They have to go answer. As long as they come back with something, they can actually talk to it. There's this whole thing about, oh, don't tell me magic sauce. And we've got a lot of magic sauce, but like when someone asks me, this is what we do. Why? Because you have to have that credibility. There's too much snake oil that's been sold.
Yeah.
So like ask questions like that. The second thing would be that especially if it's, you know, farming and you're contacting, building relationships, is it's your data. Start using it today. Like, please start adopting artificial intelligence in whichever form meets your business needs. If you're missing something, you know, on, like we talked earlier, on the writing or audio or visual or whatever it is, there's solutions out there. Lots of solutions, actually. Thanks to companies like OpenAI, there's a lot of, there's a proliferation of opportunity, which also makes it extremely challenging to choose which one's going to be the winner and invest your time in.
That's where I'm seeing is that struggle to go, like, I even myself, I'm like, I've been looking over the last month and going, man, there's this, and they all want money, obviously. And you have to like decide what's the right path to go down and how do you make that decision?
I mean, we're tracking well north of 100 companies that are kind of fit into those like four or five categories. Because they're all using OpenAI, right? So if one of them fails, I guarantee you can go to its next best competitor and it's going to be very similar, if not identical.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great advice. And I think if agents are willing to take that risk, I think that's comes down to two, is that risk of getting comfortable, start using it and mess around with it. And it may not be the right solution for you yet or now or at all, but you got to take that risk, and sitting there is not going to get you there.
Well, I mean, let's talk risk for final wrap up, right? I mean, what risk is there, right? I mean, the risk would be if you just kind of put it into your business and didn't do anything else. Like, I think the biggest risk would be if implementing like a ChatGPT for like a support chatbot and never actually seeing if it's speaking your brain.
Yeah.
You're not going to hit any nuclear codes. You're not going to have, you know, Terminators coming out of the woods. Like, Let's just be real here. Like, try it. You know, like, go try it and see if you like it. Like, it'll be surprising, I'm sure, how you find ways to utilize it. And if not, do a little bit of Googling or listen to my friend here, Ryan, and he'll be able to direct you to the right point for ways to utilize it.
Awesome. So we always wrap up with a best book. So what's one book you'd recommend that you've had an impact on you or think would have an impact on our viewers' lives?
Man, probably two books. I was trying to look at this before, but I want to go with probably Clayton Christensen's, you know, he's had the whole like Innovator's Dilemma series. And not just because I like the way that he kind of builds and kind of analyzes markets, but because of his jobs to be done theory. You know, when we look at our business, it's a struggle sometimes to go, what are people hiring us to do? Like, is it to solve this or to make more free time or to allow them to be number one or reduce OpEx? Like, what is it that they hire? And he does a great analogy in one of the books about, with McDonald's, even though it's McDonald's, about what are people hiring a milkshake to do? Because they had this dilemma of, is it a breakfast thing? Because they saw a bunch of people buying it at breakfast time. And then a bunch of people buying it at dinner time. Like, what the hell? Like, how do we have this like huge gap?
Yeah.
Right. And it goes to this whole experience about talking about what they're hiring to do. And as soon as you kind of grasp that, then you can apply it to what you do. And if you're real estate or a real estate investor, it's like, what are they hiring me because I'm a luxury agent? I take everything off their plate. Or are they hiring me because they want the cheapest possible transaction? They don't really care when it gets done. Like, you can pick a brand that fits you and say, this is what people are going to hire me to do. They can hire all these other agents to do these other things. We're not all the same, but it's hard to differentiate yourself until you understand about what you do that's different and say, okay, own that space within this market and go own it.
Yeah, it's a great book. I read it years ago and I should reread it again, but it's definitely a good one. You mentioned you had two. What was the...
Probably Ben Horowitz, Hard Things About Hard Times. Hard Things About Hard Things. And the reason why I'd mention that now is because I think there's a lot of agents having hard times. Mm-hmm. And it's a great book about him. And it's basically his story. You know, I think it was Cloudflare. And going through and like the whole industry blowing up around him, having to rebuild it and then having a successful ending. But how he found ways to be successful during hard times, making hard decisions, and in a very fluid changing industry. I think we have right now applying to the real estate, a very, interest rates are now back to normal, but we've been used to them being atypical, I guess you want to call it that, for so long. And then with the housing inflation and everything else that's going on, it's like, how do we still do all this? And I think it's starting to kind of come back to a place where people are getting the groove, but there's still going to be some challenges ahead. And I think having that body armor or kind of that vision or lens to look through may help you in those times when you're not certain about why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I haven't read the book. I'll definitely have to check that out. So we'll put that in the show notes for our viewers as well. Absolutely. And how can our viewers check out what you're up to, connect with you, and find out more about your company?
If you guys are interested, check us out at likely.ai. You can email us at moredeals@likely.ai. Those are usually the way they come in. And then there's, you know, those forms and stuff on our site. Guys, I mean, we're going to be launching something soon. And so, Ryan, maybe it'll be launched by the time you put this out, but we're launching something that will allow you to really bring artificial intelligence right here, right? And make it really simple to try So you can kind of have that same like aha moment that ChatGPT delivered, but make it very contextual to the real estate business. And then if you like that, hey, we'd love to work with you.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's great. And exactly what you said, they need to see it. Just like when ChatGPT came out, my best friend was telling me about it and sending me stuff. And I was like, okay. It wasn't until I jumped on, typed stuff in, started messing around with them. I was like, man, okay, I can see what this is about. And I think for you guys as well, you gotta see what you guys are up to really grasp it. And you can sit here and talk about AI and all this stuff. And until they see what that can do for them, I think agents need to get out there and check it out. So we'll put that in the show notes as well, so agents can check that out. So Brad, thank you for being on here. I really appreciate your time, your expertise, and your passion about this. Obviously, this is something that is burning for a lot of agents right now. And I think this will help give a little more clarity on what they can do with it and where they can go with this. And I appreciate you sharing that with our audience. I know they're going
to absolutely. Absolutely. You know, actually, now that you said that, if you go to my.likely.ai, and you're in the US continental, we'll keep you in the loop. Like, you can create a free account, get a 14-day trial, but we'll keep you in the loop on all the new things that are going to be coming out as well. Nice. And so that would be my giveaway to everyone that stayed to the end, is go to my.likely.ai and get a 14-day free trial.
Awesome. We'll put that in the show notes as well. So, Brad, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to seeing our agents take AI into their business and take it to the next level.
Absolutely. Any questions? I'm happy to help in any way I can.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for checking out today's episode. If you'd like more videos like this, be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Facebook page and our other social media channels. Looking forward to bringing you more great content like this, and happy farming.